Reading FC pushed their claim for a serious title challenge with a rip-roaring first half display at Bournemouth on the weekend, before pushing their claim for another disappointing descent down the table by throwing their two-goal lead away and losing 4-2. Welcome to the Tireless Den Podcast 241 with your host Mark Mayer, and join me this week to discuss what should have been a really good start to Reading's post-international break fixtures, but isn't, sadly, as Westy. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Just staying offline now. How disappointing that was that happened on a Saturday afternoon. Early morning, late morning.
Yeah, the lunchtime kickoff. Usually there's no goals in a lunchtime kickoff. That's what people keep telling me.
I said to my mate, I said, don't ever do an early game for goals, because there's always 0-0. But how wrong could I be?
Well, fair enough. Hashtag gambleaware is the staple addition to that. And before we get on then with the recap, just to point out that there are a couple of interviews with Brian Harrod and Leroy Lita on the podcast over the international break. So if you pop over to the Tireless Den website or the podcast channels for those, it's really enjoyable. A couple of sessions having those guys on. So big thanks to them and to anyone listening in. If you want to go to the Tireless Den website, there's a whole interview section. We've had Martin Allen on a website article over the period as well. So scroll down a little bit on the Tireless Den website and you'll see our interviews section, which is always where we keep those exclusives that we deliver every now and again. And also thank you as always to our Patreon subscribers and ZCZ Films, our sponsor. And, well, let's get on with it then. Recap, Bournemouth 4, Reading 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Let's tackle this in a chronological order then, Westy, and that means about 3 minutes in, Reading getting a penalty and a first goal. Lovely bit of play it was by Alpha Smedo to create space down the left-hand side, winning the penalty. And I suppose from that and how the game kind of unfolded from that point on, made me feel that Alpha Smedo, he's a really good ball carrier, but I can't think of anything else he really did during the game. And that kind of marks him out for me. He's starting to be a bit of a luxury player.
Sure, I want to. So when we do this analysis today, I really want to do it in sort of real time. I sat there watching the game and I said, when I come on the show today, I want to do it sort of in real time. So I'm glad you started with that, because I thought Semedo, and I've watched him over the last three or four games, when he's been quite, he's quite involved in the games in the first half, and he tends to drift out of games. And I think this game was no different with his performance. And again, it's a great bit of play by him. I still watching the game and now still looking back at it, I still think the goalkeeper should have been sent off. I think he was tapping that ball into the net if he got round him. If it weren't for the contact, he was certainly favoured for that ball. I don't know why the goalkeeper wasn't sent off.
Yeah, well, I suppose looking back there, it was almost a strange foul in a way, because he kind of headbutted Semedo's knee, which took him down. I suppose it was that which maybe confused the referee. I know what you mean about the red card, because it's a goal, isn't it, really?
It's a goal. He was tapping in. I mean, if you watch the replay, obviously the defender gets the ball. But if it wasn't for Semedo falling to the floor, I think he had a tap in. He might have had to stretch, but he certainly would have scored. So I don't know why the goalkeeper wasn't sent off. Not in sour grapes, but that's what I thought at the time. And I still think that now. But well taken penalty by Joao. And again, it was a great start, wasn't it? I thought first half we was good value, to be fair.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, isn't it? You go through the first half and the, statistically, we'll get onto that a bit more later on, but Reading didn't really have any of the ball, but it still looks threatening going forward. There were a couple of times when, actually, I thought the Reading kind of overworked it in the final third rather than, you know, just having a shot or just laying in that final pass or cross. And the second goal, I suppose, was a sign that, of not overworking it and what happens when you do just kind of make the decision to be incisive. It's a lovely bit of high pressing from Rinomoto and Josh Laurent winning the ball back. Ejaria picks up the ball. He's so much more dangerous in central areas than he is on the wing. Lovely ball into Aluko, good run, good finish, and that's 2-0. It was all seeming so simple.
Yeah, and we looked relatively comfortable, didn't we? They hadn't really worked our goal. I mean, even, again, in real time, when you watch how they were playing, they were certainly targeting our right-hand side. Dan Jumu ended up scoring a second goal. They was using him a lot, and nothing was coming down their left, really. Nothing was coming down our left, really. But they were certainly targeting our right-hand side, and when you go into the second half, that certainly paid dividends for them.
Yeah, well, this is the question, isn't it? Is what changed at half time? Because in the second half, statistically speaking, Reading had more the ball. We had more shots in the second half. But Was it a case that Reading kind of dropped too deep? Because you watch those first two goals that go in. There were on the Sky, I think Sky did a really good analysis at the time of picking out what players did wrong, and it's not obvious. There's no like howlers for either goal. But I think Reading perhaps were just a bit too deep. There wasn't actually, you know, for the second goal, Rinnan Oswald and Lomond won the ball quite high up the pitch, but they were basically on their 18-yard line for both goals. And you just wonder whether Reading dropped off a bit too much for the start of the second half.
Well, that same thing happened at Coventry as well, didn't it? They scored from distance. I mean, the goalkeeper was probably at fault for that one in particular. But you'd have to say that I thought, if you see the first goal, I just think it's a good goal. I think they played it quite well. It's a good cross into the box. When you've got your own defenders facing their own goal, you always know you're in trouble. And they chased the ball in and obviously they scored. And I thought, you know what? I said to my boys who started watching the game with me, I said to them at half-time, I said, get to the hour, round about the hour, then we'll be watching the rest of the game for our fingers. And I wasn't far from being wrong. You know, because you just expect it at Reading, don't you? You think you've had a good start, you've got in 2-0 up. I still thought Bournemouth were looking like a good side. You know they're going to be out there or thereabouts at the end of the season. So taking a 2-0 lead into half-time, he was quite happy with that. But you knew that second half was going to be a problem, especially if they got an early goal, which ended up happening. But I think the second goal, you've really got to look at Estevez for that second goal. If you look at Dan Juma's run, Estevez has got dragged out wide when he had absolutely no reason to be out there. And by the time he'd reacted, it was already too late. And he'd let his winger go straight in on goal. And you know what's going to happen. You can't blame the goalkeeper for that. It's a one-on-one situation and end up in the back of the net. And I think really, if you look back at the last three games, especially, I think you'll see teams target that right-hand side with Estevez there. Because not that he's a bad footballer, and I don't want to pick on him in particular because it's a team game. But he certainly looks a little bit naive when it comes to defending now and again. And I think that second goal showed up in spades. I mean, if you look back at the game, I think it was Preston, was it, when he headed the ball back into play, when again he should have played it out. I just think he's more of a wing back than he is a right back. And I think that at the moment is starting to cost us. He's definitely needs some more experience at that right back. And you could do a Vidim getting fit and being back in there as soon as possible, because I thought that second goal was poor defending.
Yeah, well, you watch the replay and you can see he's watching the ball, isn't he? He doesn't really know where his man is. He's just assuming he's going to stand still, which at any level is a bit sort of schoolboy, isn't it? And this is the thing with, they absolutely, you look at the stats as well, in the second half in particular, Bournemouth had made a change at half-time to push their, you know, change their left back, and they really did overload on our right wing, as you said, and Estevez and Aluko as well, just, they're not a combination. You think of great defensive combinations over the years down wings. Joby McEnough and Ian Hart, for example. You had two players with bags of experience who were pretty athletic, knew what they were doing. Aluko, he's never been a defensive-minded player. Estevez, he's 18. It's difficult to... You can make the good pass and the good tackle every now and again when you're 18, but I don't think you can stay perfectly alert and focused. And for me, yeah, it was telling that he came off for Tom Holmes, who, again, young player, but he's much more defensively minded as a centre-back, really. So I feel like, we'll talk about the team we're going to play on Wednesday later on, but I feel like it's probably time to take Estevez out of the team. It's the third game in a row he's been subbed for now. And you said about Bournemouth, you know, they're a good team, and this is one of the arguments that you can make for the second half, is did they just get better? Were they just taking more risks than it coming off? Because, you know, they are, that certainly for the third goal, I can't argue with the third goal at all. It's a great finish, and the other two goals are pretty decent for a lot of the sense.
Yeah, again, and there was the incident with Aluko when he went for on goal as well. I know they picked that bit on the telly when they said that, you know, if there had been VAR, the player might have been sent off, because he certainly got to the ball first. I mean, did he go down a little bit easily? Yes, but like you said, you've seen a lot of Premier League games this year that any sort of contact and you're looking at a red card, especially as you got there first. So the game could have been, it was what I say a lot when on this show, is it was a typical Championship game, wasn't it? You could quite easily make a case of Reading winning that game, even, well, they should have probably got a draw even when they went 3-2 down. But the third goal by Cook, I mean, it's a great strike. He's hit it beautifully. But again, you can look at, if you look at Semedo, me saying he looks a bit off the pace when the second half comes, he sort of didn't give what I would call 100% to try and get to that shot before Cook let it off, because he has a touch, Cook. He doesn't just hit it. He has a touch. Rinomoto tries to close it down. Semedo's sort of on his right-hand side. But it was sort of 75% half pace trying to get there rather than making that real dive and that real effort to stop the shot going on target. And again, not a goalkeeper in the world would have saved that. It was a great strike. And we've been sort of the worst end of those sort of goals recently, haven't we? Sort of hit from outside the box that have ended up going in the back of the net. And I will say this about Reading, I'm still infused by them. You know, I still think that when I've watched them, even watching them getting beat over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I still think there's enough there that you could quite easily see them go on another run of winning 4 or 5 games on the trot. Because although they're getting beat and it looks quite heavy and they are conceding a lot of goals, most of them goals are coming from their own naivety. And just if you can just take that out of it, just the stupid little errors, there's enough going forward. There's enough in that team to think, you know what, they are a good side. But you just hope this doesn't batter their confidence, these sort of three sort of heavy defeats on the bounce.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? At some point, the silly errors, they are going to have to go at some point. You can't go a whole season giving a goal away every game. No one will do that. So what happens when you do get the silly errors gone? Do you find other errors or other things go against you, or can you then turn it back on? And that's the question that Reading have now. One other stat that I wanted to mention for the Bournemouth game was that in the first half, Bournemouth had 8 corners. In the second half, they only had 2. And that's not because they weren't, you know, attacking as much. It's on the contrary. I think that shows to me that we were stopping crosses less and clearing the danger less. And Reading have been really good at dealing with set plays. I can't think of a, you know, a series. Maybe I think it's Cardiff maybe scored from set play early in the season, but really not an area that we've been troubled with. So that kind of showed to me that second half drop off, the clearances weren't there, the blocks weren't there, and that was integral as well. And there was a moment. Reading almost got back into the game at 3-2 down, I think it was, when the header, I think it was Zhao, was saved really well by Begovic on the line. I've not seen a proper replay of this yet that I'm satisfied with. I'm not saying it did go over the line, but I am saying that when Sky Sports did their kind of review of, here's the statistical, you know, the graphic they do of goal decision system, that wasn't the furthest over the line it was when they did that live. So I was left there a little bit thinking, I'd like to see that one again.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because the camera angle's from the other side, wasn't it? If you'd have seen it from where it sort of hit the goalkeeper's head, didn't it? Hit his hand and then hit his head.
Yeah.
Again, I'm convinced it wasn't over the line, but certainly you're right on that graphic, because it was nowhere near where that ball ended up in the last sort of port of call. I would also say what they've done well in the first half, Reading, is Rinomota and Clement got to help their fullbacks. Clement went to help Richards, and Rinomota got over to help Estevez. And I think that sort of stopped in the second half, or it just wasn't quite so prevalent. And I think, again, that was our undoing in the end.
Lauren.
Sorry, yeah, Lauren. Yeah, Lauren.
No, that's fine. They are a good two, Winamoto and Lauren. And I think that is something that we are going to build around. I'm happy to build around that. But it feels like maybe it's Pavlovic, maybe it's the injuries. It feels like the players around, you know, the players that have to drop back and do a little bit. If it's Semedo, if it's Aluko, it feels like those are the ones that aren't carrying out the game plan perhaps as well as they need to at the moment. So that's, you know, as I said, we're going to talk about Millwall a bit later on, and we'll see whether we fancy him making any changes. The other thing is worth saying is that we last lost 4 on the bounce, conceding 3-plus goals in all of those defeats back in March 1998, which was a season that didn't go too well. In terms of how far we think we're going to drop down the table, as you'll know, Westy, that 97-98 we finished bottom. I don't think even on this 4 on the bounce, we're not talking about a team that's going to just plummet to 18th, 19th, hopefully, are we?
No, I don't think so. Like I say, if you look back at those 3 games, I mean, they were well in the Preston game, probably should have took the lead, didn't. They was well in the Stoke game, probably should have took the lead and didn't. And if you look at the mistakes they've been made, generally, a lot of the goals anyway, it's either by the goalkeeper who's made 2 sort of howlers now, and then you've had Gibson made a howler, you've had McIntyre who had a shocker, and you've had Estevez who just looks a little bit naive. So it's by, sort of apart from the goalkeeper, by the younger sort of defenders. So you can't help that. It's not their fault. They're still learning their game. I think you really got to sort of look at that and think, maybe the inexperience at the back is kind of costing us a little bit. Not to just put a full blame on them, because obviously, like I said, it's a team game. But there's still enough there. I think there's enough there. More than enough there really to be in that top 6. Whether they win it or not, I had my concerns at the start of the season. I said that bench isn't anywhere near strong enough, and I think that's been proven to be the case, and I don't think anyone can really disagree with that. But that can be addressed if they can get to January and maybe bring a couple of extra ins to bolster it up. There's still plenty there. I think they're a good side, Reading. I just think they've just come the worst end of some silly errors recently, that's all.
Yeah, and January is only just around the corner, and this ownership has shown time and time again that it's got money in the bank if it wants to go for it. If it really believes that, you know, this is a kind of a win or bust kind of year, then it might just throw some serious funds out in January. I'm not saying that's what I want to see necessarily, because what happens if you don't win, you go bust. But that's the sort of thing we'll be keeping an eye on as we move towards January. There was a bit of an exasperated Veljko Paunovic after the game. So let's hear from him now, and then we'll go over to the mailbag.
Two halves, two different games. Looks like we played a different game. And it's the consistency is the key in this league, in every game and throughout the league, throughout the season. So that's something we have to wake up. It's time to wake up. It's time to stop thinking about what we did. And even I'm not going to talk about, don't ask me those questions anymore. So I'm a little bit not in the right mood, but this is a moment for reaction, definitely.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, Scotty asking via the email, thetilehurstend@gmail.com, a good team can't become bad overnight, but in Reading's case they can. How is this start turnaround possible? I'm now beginning to think we were just very lucky at the start of the season. Discuss. Well, this, the notion of being lucky, obviously everyone has completely different ideas of what being lucky is. For winning football games. But if you look at Reading's, you know, the wins that Reading were having, Westy, think of the Blackburn game, which was a bit to and fro, but there was amazing finishing. Rotherham game, I certainly wouldn't say they were lucky. They may be a bit lucky to win 3-0. Wickham game, generally the better team. Watford game, defended really well. Cardiff and Barnsley, the better team. I don't think there was much luck. There was a clinical finishing and good defending, but I wouldn't have said it was luck to begin with.
No, I don't think it's, again, you make your own luck to a certain extent. I just think that, well, we was clinical early doors. Teams have been clinical against us recently, haven't they? If you look at, again, the shots that have gone in from range, our own silly errors, we've give goals away against Stoke and Preston. They're virtually identical, where the right back's not come out quick enough and it looks like they're offside and everyone threw on goal. So they're making their own luck to a certain extent. I just think that in the long run, this will turn around. It turned around and we'll find we'll go on a run of 3 or 4 wins again. I think we'll look at it in a different light. It's just at the moment, it just seems that we're sort of the bad end of a bit of bad luck, if anything.
Yeah, maybe so. And Simon Povey asking, is Raphael being used as a scapegoat? Adriano adding, can we start defending again? I will say that I think it's the first 7 weeks of the season, Reading were the best team in the of the 92 teams in terms of defence. In terms of goals being conceded, and only one being conceded in those first 7 weeks. Since that, I believe we're 92nd best of the 92 teams in the top four leagues, the most goals conceded, which that's not sustainable in either sense, is it? Something's got to give there, hasn't it?
We're talking about not becoming a bad team overnight. We certainly become a bad defence overnight with the same personnel, apart from one person, which is Esteves, because otherwise it was Holmes, wasn't it? So I think everyone was looking at this game, well, Moore's back, so we should stop conceding goals, and then we ended up conceding 4. As for the other question about the goalkeeper, has he been made a scapegoat? I don't, again, social media-wise, I think everyone who's made a mistake will get pillared for it, and sometimes rightly so. But the problem is with the goalkeeper at the moment is he's made maybe 3 mistakes in the last couple of games, but then people forgot he saved a penalty. They also forget that a half-time, just for a half-time against Bournemouth, as a well-lit free kick that looked like it was going in, which he saved. It's just his footwork that's been called into question the last couple of weeks. I can't believe he did what he did on Saturday. I just don't understand what he was thinking there when he had players around him he could have quite easily given the ball to, or you just put your foot through it if you're under pressure. But he keeps making the same silly errors, and he's got knocked out of his game. But in general, if you look back at some of them games, he's kept us in it. So I think people are pretty quick to judge your mistakes rather than look at the positives.
And this is the thing, isn't it? Because you say 3 mistakes in the last sort of 3 games. Well, if he's made those 3 mistakes, you can count back the last 50 games and it's still the same number of mistakes, isn't it? It's because he was so good for so long. Even players, you go back through the annals of Reading goalkeeper history, players like Federici and Alhabsi were brilliant goalkeepers, but they made mistakes. And Raphael hasn't been one of those goalkeepers who's had a howler in him. So he's got to get it out of him. I must say that it was the 2 goals, yeah, they weren't brilliant to concede. The 3rd goal, I wasn't particularly mad about. The 4th goal, that really annoyed me on the weekend.
Yeah.
The manner of which he conceded, because it was so avoidable. But at this, yes, you're absolutely right about the footwork. But at the same point, what the thing is, in the first half, he absolutely pinged one out. So I think it was, I can't remember which player it was on the right-hand side. But from, you know, effective starter counter opportunity. Absolutely beautiful ball out, he plays to the wing, and that is the, that's probably the risk reward you have with telling a goalkeeper to look for players on a particular area and to take the time to look for them rather than just punting it upfield. Obviously situational, 91st minute, you should just be getting it upfield, but that is the risk reward of it, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And same as you, I mean, on Saturday there, it was well in that game at that point, and we could have quite easily got a 3-all draw out of it. And then we basically gifted them the last goal. And again, it can't carry on like that. And I think maybe it's a little bit overconfidence from the goalkeeper that's sort of costing him at the moment, because he is willing to have a touch and sort of play a smart ball rather than just what he should have done is just booted it. But also thought to myself as well, why didn't he just bring the man down? Do you know what I mean? Why didn't he just grab him by the legs? Because he had two players behind, he would have been sent off, give him a free kick. Even more, I don't know why he backed off. Once it was under his body, the goalkeeper, he should have gone and helped him really, because by backing off of it, he didn't help the situation, because once he got hold of the ball, he basically had a free shot of goal, didn't he?
And Rafael as well could have just picked it up and thrown it out. Like, he probably wouldn't have got sent off had he done that. So
definitely wouldn't have done.
Yeah, no, I think it's just one of those. Luckily, you think it's the sort of thing that happens. Like, how many times do you see that? Like, once every five seasons as a goalkeeper, that sort of howler. So hopefully this out of his system now, we can move forward. I can't imagine he'll be dropped for midweek, so we'll persevere with him, and rightly so. Paul asking, what did Paulo say to the players at half time? Well, these four defeats, we've been ahead in one of them at half time and drawing in one other with two losses as we go into half time. What is changing then on a sort of general level? Is it a fitness thing? Are players not quite able to, you know, we've got certain players like Alves Semedo, Estevez, they've only really played like 6-7 games max this season. Is it that, or is it tactically other teams are getting a grip of us, or is it just, you know, we're giving goals away?
Do you know, I was kind of pleased that we had sort of a higher flying team in the Championship on Saturday, because I thought to myself, do you know, they will let Reading play to a certain extent, because they won't do what Stoke and Preston done, where they try and rob them to a certain extent. Try to stifle our play. Let's let us play and see if you can break us down and then catch us on our mistakes like they did. So I thought actually playing Bournemouth or Watford or some of the teams that are at the top would be more beneficial for Reading, because we have got a lot of tricky players that can create goals, and there'd be some room for them. So I was quite happy with that. But it makes you wonder where they're going to go next. You know what I mean? You can see Millwall being a different challenge. You just hope that they can sort of, there's not a lot on the bench to replace anybody, like we said earlier. And Semedo, he has definitely drifted out of games, and Estevez has definitely switched off. So is it their fitness, or is it just their naivety in the Championship? And I know Semedo's played in for Forest, but it just makes you wonder if it's a lot of games come at once, maybe they are a little bit off the pace the longer the game goes, because that's when the mistakes are starting to creep in. And again, we've got a lot of young players that are still learning their craft, which is kind of costing us a bit at the moment. At the half time, it's quite funny actually. I was listening to the commentary on the telly, and they're saying that the manager records all of his half time team talks. So I hope he's looked back at the last three or four, because they've not really worked out too well for him, have they? So whatever he said to them this week, it's not worked too well. But the thing is, if you're 2-0 down at half time, you've got nothing to lose, have you? 2-0 football, you've got absolutely nothing to lose. You think, well, let's put a few more, let's risk a few more players going forward. And if you look at that first goal, I think there are four players in the box waiting for that cross when they scored. So you sort of, it releases the brake a little bit, because you know you're chasing the game. And unfortunately, when momentum swung, it swung in a big way. And I think obviously the manager would have said, keep it tight, just do the things you've been doing. But when the goal goes in and the momentum swings, it's always, once it's gone, it's gone. And the third goal again killed us, but it was a great goal, to be fair to him.
Yeah, and Peter saying, we all know the football's a confidence game. If you have players that are consistently making costly individual mistakes, do you risk knocking their confidence by not playing them, or play them and hope they perform? When is it time to make the change if needed? I think it's really a case-by-case basis, isn't it, really? Rafael, you know he's the first-choice goalkeeper. If you put Luke Salford in or Sam Walker, you know you're not putting as good a goalkeeper in. And in general terms, I think footballers who, you know, let's say Estevez, who's at the other end of his career, younger player, you could say, oh, yes, you risk knocking his confidence. But really, that's part of the learning curve. We took out Tom McIntyre after he made a couple of errors against Preston. Lewis Gibson didn't play, obviously, because Liam Moore came back in, but he made an error against Stoke. I think the knocking their confidence thing, it's part of the learning curve of being a footballer, isn't it? And if they are, particularly if they're young and they haven't got the guaranteed quality that someone like Rafael has, I think it is only right to take them out of the team.
Well, to be fair, you could see he wasn't afraid to make that change, was he? Once they got a second goal, you could see the problem was down our right-hand side. They was exploiting it, and he changed it straight away. I think if you look at Estevez when he come off, he looked upset that he was been put on the bench again, taken off the pitch. But if you keep making schoolboy errors, then you need to have a sit out and have a look at what you've been doing. Again, he's a good footballer, and I'm sure he'll go on to have a great career. But at the moment, he's just showing the fact that he's a little bit naive when it comes to championship level football. And why wouldn't he be? Do you know what I mean? He's not used to it. He's not from this country. He's come from not playing first team football regularly in a different league when he has played. And he's learning. And you'd hope that he's the sort of character that would look at the games, analyse them and see what he'd done wrong and how he can improve. And that's really why Porto sent him here, isn't it? To learn his craft before he makes his way, hopefully, into the Porto team for him. And if you can't take that on the chin, then it's going to have to be tough, isn't it? You have to take a little look at yourself and maybe think about another career, because you're there to be criticised. And if you're getting criticised and doing nothing about it, that's your issue. And if you're not taking it on the chin and you're not understanding where you're making the mistakes, then you're going to carry on making them.
Yeah, and you're certainly not going to reach the level that Porto and Champions League sort of level that is predicted for Estevez. People think he's, you know, watched him much more than we have, think that he is going to be that sort of level player in years to come, and Reading are just helping him take those first steps at the moment, and it has to be a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah, that's the thing, Mark. I mean, that's why Gibson's here, that's why Estevez is here. It's not to be Reading players for the rest of their career. It's for them to progress in the sides that they're at, and if they're going to make mistakes now, this is where their teams want them to make mistakes, because when you go into the Premier League or you go and play for Porto, you know that you won't get away with them quite so readily, and you'll be more criticised. So if you can't take it now, then you better start looking for another job.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kev's saying, is there an overreaction from fans? Sure, it was a disappointing second half, but there are plenty of positives to take from an attacking sense that will put lesser teams to the sword. It's these sort of questions when it comes to, you know, general fan reaction. I always find it difficult to gauge exactly what's going on, because I'm not the sort of person who trawls through the Reading FC hashtag, for example, after games. And I don't tend to, particularly after we lose, I don't tend to go on Twitter for a little while. So, I don't know, in terms of overreaction, I think it's just one of those things, isn't it? Like, if we win on Wednesday, then it will be a massive overreaction potentially in the other way, thinking that we're going to get promotion.
Yeah, no, again, if you do go on Twitter or you look at the hashtags as the game's going on, just after the game, people are writing with emotion. And again, I might have wrote something different to what I thought on Monday when we do this show. I was quite emotional about it myself, and you can understand why people write these things. But in the cold light of day, when you look back at the overall, you think, yeah, disappointing. We probably should have got something out of the game. Again, it's kind of embarrassing that we didn't be in 2-0 up at halftime. But there's plenty there. I think there's plenty there. It's not like we're looking at a side that's going to get relegated because they're not good enough. We're just looking at a team that's making silly errors that have got plenty of quality within the side, and players that will get better and better because they're young and they're still learning.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's one of the reasons why we don't do the show immediately after games on Saturday. It's partly for, you know, other logistical reasons, let's put it, but generally speaking, I think I prefer coming up on a Monday morning, you know, having a look through the game and the highlights and seeing the stats, and you look at it with a different eye. And I think that's obviously fans who, you know, react. I send out plenty of tweets out of final whistles of various games, and that's perfectly fine, but I don't take it as the gospel of to what fans think. People always, generally speaking, come up to a new game with plenty of optimism, and we'll be talking about the Millwall game in just a second. But before we do that, let's have a quick go through the news bites and catch you up on what's been going on around the other Reading FC teams this week.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Quick rundown this week, because there isn't a bunch of news to talk about other than the women's and the academy team. So the women's team, since we last updated you, drew 1-1 with high-flying Everton in the WSL. Natasha Harding scoring a kind of shotgun cross. Go check that out online if you want a bit of a curious decision as to whether that was a shot or a cross, but it hit the back of the net. 1-1 draw at Everton. They followed that up with a 2-0 win over Brighton in the Conti Cup. Harding and Emily Aitken scoring. So Reading's Conti Cup qualification, they're in amongst the second place teams now. So it depends as to how the other games fold out for whether they are going to be progressing to the next round based on other teams' scores in the last few games of that. They're seventh in the WSL. The under-23s are beaten 6-0 by Crystal Palace before the international break. They go to Boa on the 27th. They're 10th in their 13-team PL2. And the under-18s are also 10th In their 13-team Premier League South Division, they lost 2-1 at home to West Ham on Saturday. And they next up have Brighton. Okay, Reading next up. The senior men's team have Millwall on Wednesday night. So let's discuss that now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
7 p.m. kickoff at the New Den, Wednesday, November 25th. So set your clocks if you're buying on the iFollow and everything. It's not going to be on the Sky Sports red button as a 7 p.m. kickoff. And, well, Wesley, the history of Reading versus Millwall, I'm sure if you're a fan who remembers, you know, like I do, the 106 team thumping Millwall and everything, it wouldn't surprise you to hear that, you know, Reading have lost their last three trips to Millwall, who have beaten Reading in the last four of the last six games Millwall have won between these two sides. It took them 23 games to win their previous four times over Reading, if you know what I mean. So Millwall for ages were worse than Reading, and now they're a little bit, you know, better over the last couple of years. And this year we go there for another kind of hard-to-predict game.
Yeah, nice not to have a crowd there, I'm sure, for the Reading players. I'm sure we'll be pleased about that, because there's a bit of a boisterous crowd at the best of times. So that'd be good for them. But I think we will look at Millwall and we'll see what they're all about. I think they're going to hit Matt Smith up front, which they did against Cardiff. I watched highlights of that this morning. They hit Matt Smith and they try and play off him. And it's whether the two centre-backs can deal with his aerial ability. It's a little bit like a poor man's Kermigan, really, because Kermigan was a better footballer all round. But Matt Smith is really good in the air. And you wonder how they're going to approach that, because I don't think either our two centre-backs are going to be good enough aerially to challenge him. So it's what they do with that second ball or what the two of them decide between them, because he'll play up front probably much on his own. And I say he'll have players running around off of him. So that's the threat. If you can nullify that, I think you can stop Millwall. And we don't want John Daddy Bob Varson coming off the bench and scoring against him. He never seems to score against us.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? You got a couple of Reading or a few Reading expats in there, haven't you? You've got Jake Cooper starting in centre-back. Alex Pearce was on the bench on the weekend. John Daddy Bob Varson came off the bench, and that doesn't seem like a... You know, we just about avoided the Jack Stacey curse and the Rodrigo Riquelme curse last time out, so we've got to find a way of doing it this time. But saying that, Millwall don't score many goals. They've only scored more than once in a game twice all this season in the league, drawn their last three, won one in six. If Reading's defence is bad, you want to play a team whose attack isn't good, and that's what we've got.
Yeah, and they have some good chances. I don't know if you see the Cardiff game this weekend, but they have some good chances to win that game. Bod Varson had a great chance at the end. They weren't cleared off the line. It wasn't for want of trying. They could have quite easily had two or three goals. So you just hope that Reading limit the amount of chances they're giving away, like they have done over the previous three or four games.
Yeah, well, what it will be if Reading can win is the first consecutive back-to-back wins in London for the first time since April 2014, having beaten Charlton at the back end of last season, you might remember. And you know, in terms of Reading's approach to this game, Westy, I think that it really is time to go back to the team that was successful earlier in the year. That means Elise and Mate as the wide players, Ajaria through the middle, a different right back. If Yeardom's fit, then him. I'd say anyway, Yeardom come in, regardless of how Estevez is playing. Tom Holmes, I think, should be doing a job certainly as horses for courses against Millwall and Matt Smith and the like. Tom Holmes is definitely a better defender for that situation, in my opinion. But really, just to go back to that 11 that were winning games like the ones against Cardiff, and to hope that can click back into the success it was earlier in the season.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's a bad idea. Again, I'd probably like to see Holmes play it right back, just because of their aerial threat. I just think if you've got three sort of bigger men back there rather than sort of two relatively large-sized ones and two short fullbacks, I think actually Holmes could be of benefit to us, because they will try and hit us with free kicks into the box and corners. There'll be a threat from corners. And Matt Smith's really good in the air. And like I said, if you can contain him, I think you need all the help you can get with sort of some bigger defenders. Because I don't think they've got much else, really. I don't think they're much of a threat to Reading, sort of player for player anywhere else. You just hope that Reading can control the game and use the assets that we've got to pick our way through their defence and score, which we're more than capable of. It's just that threat from Matt Smith, I think, is the only thing we really need to worry about.
Yeah, when it comes to predictions, I must admit that I was sat there at half time on the weekend as the only person who had predicted Reading to beat Bournemouth with a 2-1 win. I was sat there at half time thinking, all right, this is going all right. I think there's quite a good chance Bournemouth are going to get one back. They get one back. I'm thinking, okay, just hold it out for another 34 minutes or whatever it was. And it obviously lasted about 15 seconds for that being the correct prediction. But yourself, Westy, Ollie, and Handbags all got a defeat for Reading. So Handbags is now top on 10 points. I've got 6. Yourself, Westy, got 5. Ollie and Sim on 4 points. So what are you thinking for Millwall then?
Do you know, I like to predict a win. I think it's a matter of time, like I said, before we turn this round. But on this occasion, because I'm worried about the Matt Smith effect, I think it'd be a 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the 1-1 as well, actually. I can see this being... You've got to have the kind of the game that slips you back into the form. You need to steady the ship before you can open up the sails, let's say. So I think that a 1-1 draw is a reasonable opportunity, is a reasonable scoreline. And let's face it, Reading, I don't think any fan could really turn their nose up at a point in this game.
No, I don't think so. Again, we've historically been pretty poor there recent years. It's a tough place to go. But like I say, with no crowd, is it that tough? I don't know. We'll find out on Wednesday. But I just think that they will score. And I just think that we've got enough to score. Whether we can score 2, I don't know. But we certainly think we'll score 1. So I'll stick with my 1-1.
Absolutely. Well, Reading, as I say, 7 o'clock at Millwall on Wednesday. Then at 12:30 on Saturday the 28th is Bristol City. We will be back after that game on Sky Sports, because we're then back in midweek action straight after that against Sheffield Wednesday. So plenty of games, busy schedule for Reading, plenty of chances to build up some momentum over the next few weeks, and we will be back with you after that Bristol City game, as I say. So Westy, thank you very much for popping on this afternoon.
Yeah, no problem. I was just wondering if it's about time we were not on the telly, maybe we might start getting some points.
The irony of this collapse being broadcast for all to see has not escaped me. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a horror show for Sky Sport.
Yeah, but that's how it goes when you're a team like Reading, isn't it? People only start paying attention when you start to lose the game. So as I say, thank you everyone for tuning in this week. We'll be back after the weekend. Hopefully, we'll be back to talk about a couple of wins for the Royals. Come on, you arse.